Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, J.W. Buck. In this podcast, The Cultural Christ, we will explore the intersection between the Christian faith and cultural identity. We hold interviews with followers of Jesus to discuss the way our faith impacts our culture and how our culture impacts faith. Now for part two of this interview. As you were traveling and experiencing God in different ways and being in different church settings, what were some of the lessons that you learned about faith and Christianity? How was your faith changing as you explored travel, explored other cultures, other churches?
Yeah, I think with the Asian Americanness, our theology was, it was very, you know, when they say like, you know, the cross structure of like the vertical, me and the Lord, right? And then the horizontal, me and others, right? So it's like, that was like pretty clear to us in terms of me and the Lord, our personal relationship with Jesus Christ. That was very much preached upon every single week. How to grow in your personal faith and personal understanding of Jesus. Scripture memorization was a really big component, having the memory and retention of scripture that was still very, yeah, vertically based. The horizontal piece was how to live in peace and unity and communion with each other, our family, our Asian American community. And even though like this church was like very much a loving and thriving and beautiful place, again, those comforts of people like us, yeah. Everyone's second generation, everyone's third generation, everyone is middle to upper class. Everyone got out of poverty. That is what I think brought us together. But again, that's the thing that kept us insular. And so the horizontalness of the cross only extended to people that look like us, talk like us, think like us, speak like us, have assimilated like us. So then when I left and went to college and I studied film, which brought me to other parts of the world and also allowed me to engage in other cultures, even in Los Angeles, that's where I started to see like, okay, this horizontal understanding is limitless, actually. And the limitless of Christ's love that should extend beyond not just cultural walls and barriers, but socioeconomic walls and barriers, and even language barriers.
Wow.
And so when I was working in the world, I was doing international documentary filmmaking in communities, villages, urban slums, folks who've experienced poverty and genocide and same things that my grandparents experienced: war, famine, disease, poverty, oppression, and political unrest, sexism, all of it. I think seeing what that looks like today really helped me better connect with my lineage and understanding of what my ancestors had persevered through. So that was the wake-up call for me to be like, oh, this stuff still exists for folks that are typically of darker complexion than me. Typically have less access to education than me, typically less access to socioeconomic resources than me. So knowing that though it was still so close to my lineage, then that's when like that third generation tension of like knowing what my role and my worth was in this world today, when these socioeconomic disparities are still very prevalent, trying to figure out what do I do now that I have, or I'm pursuing a degree at the time, I have access to resources and education, I have, you know, a really strong family foundation that is holding me wherever I go. What do I do with that? And how do I allow, like, right, that horizontal love to extend beyond the confines of what I thought was appropriate? So, yeah, when I started engaging in work in Africa in particular, I was meeting a lot of survivors of sexual abuse and hearing their stories of trauma that was still filled with a sense of hope for healing. I think survivors really introduced me to a limitless Christ that is all healing, all loving, all consuming beyond what I felt was like comfortable, right? And I think never having experienced any semblance of trauma that my friends in these places have, that's when I recognized that Christ is actually nearer to the brokenhearted, literally. Christ is with those at the margins, literally. Christ is with those who've been oppressed and who don't have access to the things that I took advantage of, I think. So I think it's in community and in communion with diverse stories, particularly marginalized bodies, is where I feel like I finally met Christ that was so much more expansive than what I was raised to believe.
Nicole, what you're saying squares perfectly with the Gospels, because the fullness of deity on display and where we see the pinnacle of Christ's ministry is in that suffering, is in that pain, is the cross. Mm-hmm. So it's no surprise that as God's leading you on this journey across the world to support, love, listen to these women that have been through so much, you're experiencing that same Christ, that same body broken, that same blood being spilled for, of course, salvation, but also for that solidarity that God expands to everyone, but especially those who are downcast, suffering. So thank you so much for sharing that. Where are you right now in your journey with Jesus? You know, so much of us who are on a journey, we're in process with like, where am I with God? Where am I with church? Where am I with faith? Today, as you're reflecting back on your story, do you feel like you've arrived in a good place with faith and relationship with Jesus? Or do you feel like you're still in process and still moving towards something?
Yeah, I don't know. I think even this notion of moving towards something, to me, I'm hearing, and this is probably how I was raised, like I'm hearing a striving.
Yeah.
A striving to be holy.
Yeah.
A striving to be perfect in the eyes of the Lord, or made perfect because God is perfect. And yeah, a striving to do the right things, memorize the right scriptures, be kind and nice, you know, this kind of niceness of what Christian culture could look like on the exterior. I know that for me, growing up and in college, and I think my culture kind of beats perfectionism over your head as well, the striving for holiness also was attributed with the striving for perfection. You know, perfection is one of the roots of shame, and actually doesn't allow us to come into the full expression of ourselves. So I would say that since I've been working more, you know, I've been doing international development work and with survivors of sexual abuse for the past 14 years. The past 14 years have really transformed the way that I view spirituality as progress, more so, or less progress and perfectionism or attaining or striving, and more being. And I think that's what sitting in pain, poverty, and suffering has taught me, is that we cannot pray away or wish away or fast away suffering. And as much as we have all tried those things, that sense of striving actually has caused more shame, because if it doesn't happen in your timeline, right, it actually, striving for perfection causes more shame of like, oh, I'm not good enough. Like, oh, I didn't pray hard enough. Oh, I didn't fast long enough, right?
Yeah.
So I think what has shifted for me in as a result of my work of communing with folks who've experienced intense trauma, who have faith beyond anything I've seen, is actually this awareness and growing awareness and presence of God in all things, even in the suffering, even in the pain, even in the what is. And so I think how I see it is less of a progress moving toward a goal, but more so an expanding awareness of what already is there. Because I think the limitless love of God is always there, and striving to earn it, which is what I was taught before, I think only results in shame instead of embracing the love that is.
Yeah. Thanks so much for sharing that. As you talk about your church upbringing, it sounds very pietistic. And so the movement, the Puritans coming from Europe, and the brand of Christianity was very much do right, do good, attain perfection, become holy, God is holy. And like you said, that can be crippling. And from my perspective, Jesus clarifying the law and saying, love God, love your neighbor. Something that blew my mind, Nicole, as I was doing biblical studies, is that holiness, yes, is withholding certain words to harm others. It is not doing certain things that can hurt people. That's holiness. So not sinning in certain ways that we were taught. But holiness is also crying with someone, being silent with someone, listening to someone, suffering with someone, lifting up the voice, creating agency where there wasn't agency before. That's manifestations of holiness too. It isn't simply pietistic living. In fact, piety is getting to work. You talk about vertical and the expansive vision of what the cross is. That's also piety. And that really changed my perspective. And even though we grew up in dramatically different church settings, there's a lot of that same talk, that because we're all swimming in that evangelicalism or in that pietistic movement, that's who settled the country with that version of Christianity. And so I feel that influence, and I just want to validate what you're saying. It's really beautiful. What does it look like for you to be fully you in community with Christians? You know, at this stage of your life, what does that look like?
I think a sense of liberation to be authentic in how I'm living out my truth and my gifts and my calling. Yeah, the freedom and liberation to do that, and the resourcing to do that as well, I think is what Christian community can offer, because we all have different gifts and needs and callings and resources. I think we need to learn from each other's strengths so that we know how we can bring those resources together to support each other. So that's my vision of Christian community.
For those who are listening who are on the front end of their kind of cultural discovery process, folks in their early 20s, or maybe it's a little bit later, a little bit earlier, what's some advice that you have for people who are simultaneously trying to figure out their culture and what it means and their background and their faith? What's some advice you would give to people?
I think you have to know yourself if you're going to help other people, right?
Wow.
I think a lot of us, especially young folk, we're so in this evangelicalized upbringing, we're so accustomed or attuned to go outward, to help other people out there, to go outward, to seek for God's approval out there, to do certain things. And I think social media has caused this dilemma of like to do things to look good out there, right? It's very externally based. I think transformation, if we're going to see external transformation, we have to be transformed within, right? And Jesus definitely said that, or Paul said that, someone did.
That's right.
It was Paul. So that inner transformation work, which is going to be the hardest work of your life, is what will catalyze the rest of it. And when you know yourself, that means knowing, yes, your spiritual gifts and your strengths and your God-given abilities and talents and resources, inner resources that you have to offer to the world. And it means, what does it look like to live that out in the body that you've been given, the cultural body that you've been given? So digging into even the historical context, especially if you are like me, a hyphenated American or not. Actually, we're all hyphenated Americans because I'm only indigenous people, right? We're like the true Americans, right? So it's like actually everywhere, right? Know your history, know your culture, even in your whiteness, know where you came from. And I think when we look back, we can better look forward because we know who we are, and we can even draw from the gifts and strengths and resources of our ancestors to help guide us and carry us forward. So knowing our history is important. Also, knowing, especially in context of privilege, knowing the ways that our history, the people in our histories have hurt other people and oppressed other people, knowing that is really imperative to know how we can transform that as well, to transform those systems, the racial divides. You know, there's a lot of tension between Asian and Black communities as well, a lot of racism, a lot of disbeliefs just because of lack of friendships and lack of cultural understanding. And so I think the more that we can understand where that comes from in our own culture, the more we can mend those divides with intentionality and love. So we have to know ourselves if we're going to know how we can contribute better to the world.
That's beautiful. Last question. Nicole, do you miss those Chinese classes that your parents made you take when you were younger? You miss those at all? Did you fight those when you were younger? Like, why do I have to do this? Or did you enjoy it? What was that like for you?
It was kind of mixed. Like, I knew it was important, but it was also hard because I didn't practice. So I don't miss it, but I do regret not being able to hone that skill better, I think. My sister ended up living in China for some time, so she was able to like pick it up again. But my work's been in Africa, so it's just like I don't do very well with languages in general. But I do miss that. I do miss like a lot of the cultural language, the language nuances that emerge in context, and even in my work in Africa, I miss a lot because I don't understand the language. So I'm very well aware of that. And I don't know, I don't have the gift of language, and I wish I did.
It's tough. Oh my gosh. So few people do. It's brutal.
Yeah.
So those that are listening, tell us a little bit about Freely and Hope and how people can follow you and get in touch. And your book. You got to mention your book.
Oh, yes. So, So for the past 14 years, I've been working with an organization called Freely and Hope, which I started with one survivor in Kenya, one survivor in Zambia, learning how to co-create an organization that centered the survivor's needs by providing education and leadership programs that educate communities on ways to best prevent sexual abuse and also best support survivors in their context. Yeah, in my role as director, I'm part of resource building internal resources for our communities, and also networking resources, funding resources from faith communities that want to engage in this larger work of social justice abroad, but also this larger work of equipping indigenous African, Kenyan, and Zambian leaders to lead their people toward liberation. My book is called Liberation is Here, and it's exactly that.
That's right.
Thesis of believing that survivors of sexual abuse have the potential to be the most powerful liberators in our communities, if only we let them, if only we resource them, if only we uplift them. So you can get that wherever books are sold. And we have another book for children and parents called Pendo's Power that was written by one of my colleagues and one of my first survivors in Kenya that talks about body safety and ways that adults and children can help each other be safe from child sexual abuse. So we're rolling out new curriculum actually for faith communities to train communities of faith to better protect children and survivors and everyone really in our communities, both in the church and also in our local context.
Well, Nicole, thanks so much for being on, and everybody listening, please pick up the book and definitely follow and give to Freely and Hope.
Thank you. Freelyandhope.org.
That's right. Freelyandhope.org. Thank you so much for listening. If you want more content, you can go to jwbuck.org or follow me on Instagram, handles jwbuck. If you have any questions about culture, cultural identity, or faith, feel free to send me a message. Hope you'll join us next week.